Good morning, Father Russell.
Good morning, Father Emil.
Are you well this morning?
Good, and yourself?
Fine, fine, fine. Happy to have a little bit of rain for a change.
Indeed, there was a nice downpour about 5:15 this morning.
Yes, there you go, indeed. It looks, you know, when I came out of my little flat this morning, I thought, my goodness, we are in winter already. It was so dark. All right, Father Russell, let's have a look and see what you can share with us today. I think I'm very interested to know what the bishops were talking about at the SACBC plenary, and surely you've got a comment to make about that.
Yes, it was a very full week. It started off with the opening mass, which was last Tuesday, and then on Wednesday morning we had the report of the president of the conference, Archbishop Stephen Breslin, and in that report he spoke about many different things, pointing out what the church is doing, what the church still needs to do. He spoke extensively about the situation in the country, and how he was cautious about the new leadership of the ANC, hopeful but cautious. And, of course, spent a lot of time as well speaking about young people, youth, after Mini World Youth Day, and the upcoming Synod on Youth, which is taking place this year in October in Rome. And then the bishop spent time listening to the Apostolic Nuncio, who addressed a number of different issues. He spoke to them about Mini World Youth Day and said that he hopes, because it was such a wonderful event and young people were so inspired, he hopes that they can keep the momentum going. He spoke about the absolute need for the bishops to develop a strategy for communication. He really emphasized the need for good communication if the bishops were going to offer a message of good news to the world. And he spoke about the situation in the seminaries and the concern around levels of education in the seminaries and what they need to do. And then they spent time as well looking at and evaluating Mini World Youth Day, which was a great success. Although Archbishop Breslin, in an interview with me at the end of the conference, said that he's not sure that what we were able to do at Mini World Youth Day is going to translate into World Youth Day. He still thinks that we would have a lot of work to do, because Cardinal Napier had been indicating that he thinks South Africa should host World Youth Day. Archbishop Breslin seemed a little bit unsure about that. They spent a day with the council, the newly formed Council for Evangelization, working on the new pastoral plan, which the bishops are going to send out in draft for people to have a look at and to comment on. Of course, the last pastoral plan, I think, was in the 1989 or so. People will remember that, or certainly clergy will, called Community Serving Humanity. It became a big sort of phrase for the church in South Africa. And their new pastoral plan goes under the heading Serving God, Humanity, and Creation. So we can see how Pope Francis has perhaps influenced this this pastoral plan. And then, Father Emil, you know, they also had a big celebration, the bicentennial celebration at the Church of the Beatitudes in Pretoria East on Sunday. And it was quite interesting because the preacher, who was the first vice president of the conference, called Catholics to be prophetic. And he said we must refrain from Zuma bashing because there's many other challenges in the country. And I asked him for clarity on that and said, well, surely we need to speak out when, you know, things are being done wrong. And he said, no, he's not saying don't speak out, but he just feels that the whole focus has been Zuma and Zuma bashing, and there's many other difficulties in the country that are sort of flying below the radar that you know, we're missing out because the focus has become Zuma himself. But even more interestingly was he had very strong words for the clergy. He said that the bishops had received a letter, and he quoted bits of the letter from the dicastery, I think, that deals with evangelization or mission territories in Rome. And this letter had said that, you know, there was great concern about a substantial number of priests who are being extensively educated at the sacrifice of the poor and then become lazy, materialistic, and money lovers. And that this was not the kind of church that we wanted to form for the next 200 years. Now, some priests took offense at that, and I also asked the bishop for clarity when he said in his text a substantial amount of priests, and he said, well, there are a number of priests. Remember that, as he put it, one rotten apple can destroy the whole bag. And he said, while there are very many good priests, the bishops are concerned about priests who seem to have lost their way and are not doing what they are supposed to be doing.
Mm.
And then finally, the bishops had an encounter with people of other faiths and other religions who, as Bishop Palana put it, who's in charge of the Department of Ecumenism at the conference, he said that they came for a visit, that the bishops regularly meet with other religious leaders of other faiths and of Christian denominations. And he said that these people were helping them to reflect on the past 200 years because they've shared the kind of religious platform with a number of these religious leaders. And they shared together, reflected on the past 200 years, but also looked forward and spoke about ways that they might collaborate together, because many faith communities face the same challenges internally, but also in the country itself. So it was a rather full conference.
Sounds like it. It sounds as though it was a very full conference and very all-comprehensive, really. And
Indeed.
Yes.
The question is always now how these things get translated into action.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked a number of the bishops this, and they spent a lot of time then talking about the pastoral plan and how this draft has to go out. They have to get feedback now from clergy and from religious and from laity, and they're hoping that, you know, people in parishes and in dioceses will take a look at this and give them feedback on the draft. And then in August, when they meet again, I'm guessing that they will then finalize the draft before this document is made available.
Mm-hmm. I remember the last Community Serving Humanity had the finishing touches done to it by Bernard Connor. You remember Father Bernard?
Yes, he was the editor of the Southern Cross for a while.
He was indeed, yes. Anyways, nice to see that there's a fresh pastoral plan that's coming to birth, and we look forward and with great hope to this new one.
Yes, and interestingly enough, I mean, they've decided to really take up a number of issues which are contemporary issues.
Mm.
So, for example, the bishops are talking about young people in this pastoral plan. They're talking about creation and the care of creation. They're talking about racism and justice and the question of land. So a number of contemporary issues seem to have found its way, well, at least have been spoken about in the draft of this document.
Mm. All right, Father Russell, we must move on, I think, because he has so many interesting things to say, and I still look forward to learning more about what happened at the SACBC, and I'm sure when I see Archbishop Slattery again, he'll give us a few ideas as well about what went on there. Can we move
Indeed,
on to it?
And on Spotlight as well, we're busy today, we'll go up another one. We did a number of interviews with different bishops, so people can hear the opinions of different bishops
and
what were the highlights for them of the conference in a little podcast.
Right, okay. Father Russell, let's move on, if you don't mind. Sedimeni, that's been on the lips, on the tongues of so many in South Africa for the last number of months, in fact. What price human rights has to pay in South Africa? What I'm sure you've got a few thoughts about where we've come to so far with regard to Sedimeni. I see that Barbara Creasy, the finance minister, she said that, you know, there was money available and money was paid to the NGOs and so on. Can you find a thread going through all this maze of Sedimeni?
I think the one thing that has certainly come out of this Sedimeni thing is once again how leadership has failed. And I don't want to just focus on political leadership, because I think that's true in the church. I think that's true in the corporate sector. I think we're really struggling to understand what it means to be leaders. Mm. You know, the key to understanding the struggle is the inability to take responsibility for anything. Mm. I was floored last week as to how people like the former MEC, Kedani Mashlangu, could sit on a stand in front of the families of these people who had died, who I dare say were killed by this move.
Yeah.
and simply just try and pass the buck and take responsibility for nothing. I mean, this points to a real deep crisis, not just in terms of human rights, but even in our ability to lead and to take responsibility for what we're supposed to do. I was, however, slightly heartened yesterday, or last night at least, to see Aaron Motsoaledi, the Minister of Health, making an apology, breaking down himself and, you know, crying as he spoke about this thing. But it seems as if from what Creasy said and Motsoaledi said last night, you know, that the people who did this have lied and lied and lied again about what happened.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to think that the only way we're going to come to the real truth of the situation is if someone has an audit of the where the money went. Because it seems to me that the money, greed, has played an important role in this thing, and that some of these NGOs, no doubt, that were paid, were offered all sorts of other kickbacks and things, and the politicians themselves received kickbacks. Because there's no other explanation if people are saying there was money in the budget, and the National Health Minister saying there was never such a policy to move these patients.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that we see some justice done, because we did not see justice after Marikana. And I want to say that this tragedy, without negating the tragedy of Marikana, is probably the biggest single tragedy and boil on, you know, the democratic era in South Africa.
Yeah, you're quite right. You're very, very right. And I mean, I'm just amazed at how this has been going on and on and on, and all the filth just keeps coming out, and so many people have been hurt and wounded and died because of greed and all the sorts of things you're talking about now.
You know, in the newspaper the other day, I think it was yesterday morning, Star, or the morning before, I read that some of the bodies of these people have still not been recovered, or families still don't know where the bodies are, some of their loved ones that were moved out of life Isidumeni. Mm-hmm. That the numbers that we are being given in the news are not necessarily the numbers. There are other stories still that haven't been haven't been told.
Mm-hmm.
This is a disaster.
Absolutely.
This is a talk about criminal and and sort of against the very basic dignity of human beings. How some people could allow this to happen to the most vulnerable is mind-boggling. Mm. And I think it makes for a very scary kind of society if that's how we treat the most vulnerable in society.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you heard how Motsoaledi was describing how these people were tied up with sheets and put into vans to be taken off to these facilities. I just completely inhumane.
I mean,
crime against humanity.
You know, Father Russell, what hurts me so much about all this is that life has become expendable. It's just, there's no sacredness to human life anymore. I mean, it starts with abortion. Now we see what happened with the Isidumeni. And just generally speaking, you wonder, have people just lost the appreciation of life as being sacred?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very good question, and you raise a very good point. I mean, I hope that in those who are strongly pro-life and will regularly talk out against abortion, I mean, I think this is another important issue, because the whole of life, in every stage, if we're pro-life, we need to look after that. And,
right.
And this is a pro-life issue. You're absolutely right. And that brings it into the domain of the church once again. And I really think that the church itself
right.
needs to say something about the situation and the assault on life that took place by not just simply politicians, but politicians heading up health departments, the health department, which is meant to be, surely one would expect the medical profession, the health department, to be pro-life.
Yeah. You know, I hope people are listening to this, and when they go to Mass on Sunday, they buy the Southern Cross, because there's a wonderful article exactly on, not an article, it's the editorial, in fact, of the Southern Cross of this coming week, and written by Gunther Simmermacher, I think it is, who must have done that. But very, very good, making the points that we're just talking about now.
Good.
Okay, let's move on. We're marching to the end of our program here. The DA says postpone SONA and the SONA address until Zuma goes. What do you make of all this now?
Well, you know, this is politicking, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, that the DA has now come out and said that next week, I mean, the State of the Nation address is meant to be next week, you know, next Thursday, week today.
Yes.
And I hear that, you know, he's written to the Speaker of the National Assembly, Balek Mbete, requesting for SONA to be postponed.
Yeah.
Because the State of the Nation should be postponed until President Jacob Zuma has been removed from office and Parliament is afforded the opportunity to elect a new president.
Right.
You know, it's interesting. Balek Mbete is no longer in the position that she used to be within the ANC anymore. So, in one sense, she's a little bit more independent. It'll be very interesting to see how she handles the situation. But I can't see the State of the Nation being postponed. And it seems to me that the fact that the DA is kind of calling for this might once again just entrench the ANC's position that they're not going to give in to the opposition. You know, I sometimes wonder about the tactics of the DA, to be honest, when it comes to these things. I mean, you remember last year they were calling for for Parliament to be dissolved, which I thought was a dangerous sort of thing to be calling for. I'm not sure, you know, I think there's an ANC Lekgotla happening later this week. We'll wait and see what happens, but I'm not sure that postponing this is going to be the answer.
Yeah.
They're pointing to the cost of it. They're pointing to the fact that if Zuma is going, he can't really stand up there and give the government's vision for the country in the year ahead because he won't be there to implement it. But, you know, we have to be very careful about these things and always ask ourselves the next question, which is the layer down, which I think we often don't, is what's really going on here and how much of this is for the best interests of the country and how much of this is politicking, is scoring points.
All right, then, you know, we've gone right over time, but thank you very much for those points. Anything more you want to say about this before we say goodbye?
No, I think
that's it.
I think that, you know, that's enough. I mean, you know, one thing, Father Emma, which I think I spoke about on Tuesday afternoon when I stood in on Changing Gear, one thing I think people should really go and read, and I mean, I think all the stuff about SONA as well and, you know, News 24 reporting the other day that the National Working Committee has told the top six to remove Zuma and then that's being denied. One thing people would really do well to go and read and reflect on is the Holy Father's message for World Communications Day, which is available everywhere. You can get it on Spotlight as well. The Holy Father has some piercing insights into disinformation, fake news, the search for truth, and how to discern what we read in an era where, you know, disinformation has become almost a way of life. I think it's a really excellent a piece to go and read and to reflect on.
Okay, and that's available on Spotlight.
It is available on Spotlight. We've got a summary of the text on Spotlight.Africa.
Right.
But, I mean, one could also pick it up, for example, on the Vatican's website itself.
Right.
It's not a long document. It's 4 pages.
Right.
But a really wonderful message from Pope Francis, and also just showing how in tune he is with what's going on in the world when it comes to the use of information and disinformation.
Right.
And he says, quite strikingly, and I know we've gone over time, but he says quite strikingly, he says, in the scriptures themselves, right in the beginning of the book of Genesis, is where we see the first fake news, where the crafty serpent tries to trick the woman.
Yeah.
And sort of says to us today, we should not allow ourselves to be tricked by the crafty serpent of fake news. And he goes on to give a couple of other biblical examples like Tower of Babel, etc., etc. But it's really well worth reading and reflecting on.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Yes, indeed. Okay, then, thank you very much, Russell. Lovely talking to you again, and have a lovely, lovely day.
Thanks, Father Emma. All the best.
God bless you. That was Father Russell Pollitt telling us about the SACBC plenary, Esse Dimeni, and also the future State of the Nation address.
Hi, I am Father Russell Pollitt from the Jesuit Institute, and you are tuned in to Radio Veritas, where we bring you the good news for a change.